I have an outline prepared, and I have to give credit where credit is due. This material I'm presenting to you in the next 3 weeks is based upon a series of articles by Dr. David Paulison. Dr. Paulison is an ordained minister in the Presbyterian Church of America. He is a professor at Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia, but his main work is director of the Christian Counseling and Education Foundation in Philadelphia as well. He was the professor of the class I was taking this past spring and summer, and he's written a number of books as well on Christian counseling. I have great admiration and respect for him. But he wrote a series of articles some 16 years ago on anger. And this first particular lesson is dealing with understanding anger, putting it in its proper context. And I think the next 2 weeks will be more specific on dealing with anger issues. And really what prompted me to want to do this class on this issue is because of a conviction I have as a result of the class I took. And that is I think we need to do more in our congregation in terms of training, equipping the body to minister to one another. Or as Dr. Paulison calls it, learning how to love each other. I think there's a lot to be said for that, that you love each other by ministering to one another. It's not just a warm feeling we have. It's not just sentimentality. It's how we minister to each other. We love each other by ministering to each other. We bring the word to God of God to bear upon each other's lives. We help each other out. We counsel each other. And all of us can do that. You know, this is not the domain for a specific group of people who are seminary trained or who have formal education. All of us can minister. And I think all of us should be encouraged to do that more thoroughly, perhaps, than what we've done before. Okay? So, some of these are quotations directly from the article. But first of all, the question is posed, or a series of questions. What is anger, and how do we make sense of it? Let's begin with five general statements about something we often experience but seldom stop to understand. As I was just saying to someone beforehand, anger lies at the root of a lot of other problems. I can tell you that from my own pastoral experience, but also from my own personal experience. Anger lies at the root of depression. Anger lies at the root of a lot of marital problems. Anger lies at the root of a lot of interpersonal problems. Anger can be the root of many other pastoral issues. Okay? First of all, number one, the Bible is about anger. And the reason why the article mentions that is because we ought to be very clear that we don't dismiss anger outright as being something entirely sinful. The Bible tells us that there is a very good type of anger. In fact, who is the most angry person in the Bible? God. God is the angriest person in the Bible. Think of Romans 1. The wrath of God is poured out. Now, how often do we sing about that? How often do we talk about that? How often do we preach about that? You know, the most famous sermon in American history is what? Sinners in the hands of an angry God. Well, that seems almost quaint to us today in the year 2011 because, well, we don't preach that way anymore. We don't sing. That doesn't fit in very well with praise songs, does it? We sing about the anger of God. But God is angry. God's very angry as a reflection of his holiness and his justice. Okay? There's anger against sin, the Bible says. And there's anger against continuing sin. And there's anger against the suffering of God's people. There's anger that must be satisfied ultimately in the final judgment. So think of anger in terms of those three aspects, that God is very angry against the sin of his people, of his creatures. God is angry against the continuing sin of mankind. And God is angry about the suffering, the unjust suffering of his people, which needs to be rectified. And God's grace in the gospel of Jesus Christ addresses all three. Jesus Christ addresses God's anger against sin. The Catechism puts that so beautifully, you know, that in the death of Jesus Christ, we have the love of God and the wrath of God joined together. Why does Jesus have to die, says the catechism? Because God's justice, God's anger demands it. And yet, why did Jesus die? For God so loved the world. God is very angry about the continuing sin that lives in our lives. And so he sends his Spirit. Now, there are many things about the work of the Holy Spirit that I think we just skim the surface. And I think Romans 8 points it out to us. I mean, how often do we think of our Christianity in terms of sonship, in terms of adoption? I mean, how many times do we think about that expression, crying out, Abba, Father, being what a child who's hurt cries out? I've never thought of it that way until Sinclair Ferguson pointed that out to me in a book I read this past week. That the imagery there is not of someone who's tranquil, but someone who's in need, crying out, Father, help me. And then there's God's ultimate justice to satisfy his anger against the suffering of his people. In other words, you see time and again in the Psalms, in the book of Revelation, people who cry out to God because of unjust suffering. God's people who suffer for no other reason than they are God's people. God will have the final word. Okay? He will make all things right. So the Bible also addresses the motives for anger. And we'll talk more about that in the time to come. What motivates your anger? Are your motivations godly or ungodly? And then, what is the fruit of your anger? Is the fruit of your anger, the outcome of your anger, something helpful, beneficial? Does it minister to people? Or is it destructive? Is it ungodly? Does it stir up other sins and other problems? Okay? So, the Bible is about anger in many respects. Secondly, anger, says the outline, is something you do. And I think what Dr. Paulson means by that is that anger covers many different aspects or many different parts of who we are. Okay? Anger is something that you do with all that you are as a person. Getting this straight, he says, will help you see through the half-truths by which our culture lies to us about anger. Think about that for a moment. There are some people who say, you know what? Sometimes it's just good to vent. To vent your spleen, right? To just have this outburst of anger, just let it all out. Others say, no, no, no. All anger is bad. All anger is sinful. And what you have to do is not vent your spleen, but you have to keep it inside, right? You have to keep all your anger inside. And so we're always tense because all this stuff is welling up inside, but we don't dare let it escape. No, anger is something that affects various aspects of who we are. Think about, first of all, in terms of how it affects us in terms of our physiology, the body, in other words. The flush face, the adrenaline surge, clenched muscles, churning stomach. Some of you maybe get so angry that you become physically ill. Yeah, you have stomach cramps. You're in the bathroom for hours on end. Again, this is not something I think that people can't relate to. All of you know what I'm talking about. So you see this in yourself or you see this in someone else. That's why, too, I really want to encourage us to use this material, if not for ourselves, then for someone that we come into contact with. Emotional. Think of the spectrum of emotions that are related to anger or how anger manifests itself emotionally. There are some people who manifest their anger by a mild irritability. It's kind of a low-grade fever, you know? They're not going to go on a rampage, but there's just this burning anger at a low temperature, but just enough to make things irritable. And then there are some people who are just filled with blind rage. And all of us perhaps can cite examples of that, hopefully not from our own lives, but our own example, but from others. I knew of one employer, for example, who had such a terrible anger problem that it was not uncommon for him to chase his employees across the yard with a wrench in his hand. Okay? And this was a man who served as an elder in the church. Physiologically, emotionally, mentally. Anger is not just something that affects you physically, not just something that affects you emotionally, but think of mentally the kind of mental words or pictures that conjure up in your anger, your attitudes, judgments. Think of what Jesus said about this, that murder is not just committing homicide, stabbing someone in the back, shooting someone. It's also what, said Jesus? Murder includes, pardon me? when you say what to your brother? You fool, blockhead. You are in danger of what? Said Jesus. Hellfire. Do you think Jesus was exaggerating to make a point there? I don't think he was exaggerating. The Catechism reflects this as well, that murder includes not only the outward acts of homicide, but also thoughts and attitudes. You want to see someone dead because of what they've done to offend you. Reason, imagination, memory, conscience. And you know, there are some people who, when they deal with their anger, recycle those images and those thoughts, those attitudes over and over and over again. They can't seemingly stop doing that. Anger is also behavioral. Think of accusatory or sarcastic words. People manifest anger in different ways. Some people are accusatory, some people are sarcastic, some people curse. Exaggerations, gestures, hitting, disgusted sighs. I mean, those are the more mild expressions. But do you know people who punch walls or punch holes in drywall? Maybe you have children that have done that, or maybe you've done that as a child. I've known that. I've known people get so angry, they punch a hole in the wall or punch a hole in the window. People who scream, who yell, threats, glowering. Okay. Paulison notes, anger, like other sins, rarely stands alone. It is often woven deeply into other personal problems. Often anger and fear are close cousins. Think about that for a moment. That what prompts anger sometimes is fear. Or anger in terms of, other problems, as I note in the next point there. Substance abuse. Do you know of someone perhaps who drinks excessively or who takes drugs for no other reason than to calm their nerves? They're angry. And so drinking yourself into oblivion after work is the only way you calm down your nerves. That's how you deal with your anger. Or sexual immorality. Paulison cites an example of a man he counseled who was into internet pornography because he was angry at God for not giving him a wife. So that was his response. Okay? Or he notes also a person who committed adultery in order to retaliate against the spouse who had been unfaithful. You do that to me, I'll do that to you. Okay? Out of anger. Anger is not only a personal problem, it is also an interpersonal problem. It has an object. In other words, it doesn't just affect you, it affects other people around you, your family, your neighbors, your co-workers, your employer or employee, and the church. Think about this. God as well is affected by our anger. There are many people who are angry at God. They're angry at God because they think that God must act a certain way for him to be truly God. That God has to put your life in a certain order or arrange things a certain way for him truly to be God, to be your father. And so when that doesn't happen, they become very angry. And I can tell you from my own experience as a pastor, there are many angry people who are angry at God. They're angry at God because God has disappointed them or because they have certain expectations that are not biblical. And when those expectations aren't met, they lash out against God. So anger is something you do, secondly. Third, and by the way, if any of you have any questions or you want to dispute something, please stop me, raise your hand, okay? If something seems unclear to you, I'll be happy to do my best to clarify things. Third, anger is natural. What do we mean by that? Anger is a given. It is natural to human beings in two very different ways. It is natural because we were created in God's image, meaning that if God is the angriest person in the Bible, and if we're created in God's image, shouldn't we also reflect that anger as well? And I mean that in the most positive way. Anger, at its very heart, is displeasure with something that is perceived to be wrong. Displeasure at what is perceived to be an injustice, either against you or against somebody else. You see someone who's attacked unjustly, you become angry. Why? Because you see that something's wrong. Something has to be made right. Something has to be changed. Someone has to be punished. Okay? But also, it is natural because we fell into sin. That's the other side of the spectrum, the other end of the spectrum. That anger, our anger can be a reflection of our image, being an image bearer of God, but it can also be an expression of our sinful nature. Okay? As human beings made and remade in the image of a holy God, we are hardwired with the capacity for anger at wrong as an expression of love, both for God and for those harmed, should be harmed by wrong. Think of Psalm 119. Isn't it Psalm 119 that says, I weep or I become angry because your law is broken? Have you ever felt that way? When you see gross immorality and you become angry for no other reason than people have flaunted their unbelief, they flaunted their disobedience. Don't you see that, for example, with I gave you one example recently. When in the news you had the state of New York legalizing same-sex unions, and the people are rejoicing. And the way the media portrays it, they portray it as, well, this is just another step like we had with the civil rights movement, where blacks were given, and minorities were given equal status among citizens in the nation. Now, the homosexual community is given equal status. Like John Piper said recently, you know, people have been celebrating homosexuality and advocating homosexuality since the dawn of history. Okay? If you study history, homosexuality was rampant in Greek and Roman society. But he says what's really upsetting is how now the direction is in America that it's just normal. It's not just that it's accepted, but it's normal. And so they should be treated as normal. Okay? He goes on to say, as sinners who have ourselves receive mercy instead of wrath, we have the otherwise inexplicable capability, simultaneously to hate wrong, to be angry at wrong, and to give love to those who do wrong. This is the challenge of the gospel, my friends, to be able to show mercy to those who do wrong. On some have mercy with fear, hating even the garment polluted by the flesh. The quote there from Jude chapter 1, verse 23. When in counseling you encounter adultery or violence toward the weak or cruel words, you will feel pain and loathing at the deeds and their effect on others. I think every elder who served as an elder knows what I'm talking about, where you deal with people who have not just fallen into sin, but sometimes brazenly done so, where they're hostile towards the elders or towards the minister or towards the gospel, and you become very angry with them. On the other hand, you will feel loathing and against their deeds and effect upon others. Yet you will simultaneously, he says, have mercy to give generously to the perpetrators of such evils. That's the challenge, isn't it? Okay, anger is learned, number four. First, anger is taught and modeled to us. Your parents, your teachers, people you work with, your siblings perhaps. Okay. And then secondly, anger is practiced and can become a habitual way of life. Okay. Because if you are enslaved to that sin, enslaved to that pattern of behavior, it becomes habit forming. You know, people who are caught in this endless cycle of anger and dealing with it in a very ungodly way. John? Yes. Yes. No, but I think what we're talking about here is the sinful type of anger. And certainly we would say we're hardwired, to use Paulson's language, already from our infancy, from our conception, we are conceived and born in sin. And part of that sinful nature includes anger, sinful anger. Okay? And I think what he's talking here is in terms of how we develop these patterns of behavior. Yes, they flow out of that well of our sinful nature, but we also see and we imitate those who practice sinful anger. Yeah, absolutely, perfect. That's a good word. Yeah. Okay. And then 5, anger is a moral matter. And I quoted here, Paulison here at length. Anger evaluates. Think about that. Anger evaluates. And anger is itself evaluated. First, anger evaluates. That is, it weighs something or someone, finds it lacking, wrong, or displeasing, and then moves into action. Anger arouses us to attack or discredit what we find displeasing. Anger has on occasion been well described as the moral emotion. It is a self-contained judicial system reacting to perceived wrong with energy. Okay, I just want to take a breath here and pause and have you think about that. What the engine that drives anger is a perception that something's wrong. Something needs to be addressed. Something needs to be corrected. Something needs to be punished. Francis? Before the fall? Well, one could say that the fall of Satan and his hosts certainly prompted God's anger. But we would certainly describe anger as part of, or the expression of God's holiness, which has existed from all eternity, of course. But the manifestation of that anger may not have taken place certainly with Adam until the fall into sin. But the capacity to become angry certainly was there already at his creation, right? In other words, the ability to become angry didn't happen after the fall. It was already there in terms of his makeup as an image bearer of God. I would put it that way. Steve? Absolutely. Yeah, just for those of you who may not have heard that, Steve said Adam should have become angry when he was, when his wife presented the fruit to him. He should have been angry that she had even suggested doing that. So, Terry, you look puzzled. Yes. Yes. No. There is a righteous anger that says, you're trying to entice me into sin. Let's use it another example. If someone entices you into sin, trying to seduce you into sin, you ought to become very angry at that person. That's a righteous type of anger. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, he had already cast them into hell, had he not? That's different than blame shifting, by the way, Terry, because after the Lord confronts Adam and Eve, what does Adam say? The woman you gave me. Not just blaming the woman, he's blaming God. The woman you gave me, she caused me to sin. What does the woman say? The serpent deceived me, and I sinned. There you have a classic case of blame shifting, finger pointing. That's different than what we're talking about in terms of perceiving a wrong, saying this is wrong, and it arouses your anger, a holy type of anger, godly type of anger. Does that help? Okay. Going on in the middle of that paragraph, it says, I have typically broadened our definition of anger to include judgmentalism. I think all of us, in one degree or another, deal with judgmentalism. I had somebody say to me recently, you know, if I was a pastor, I'd really struggle with judgmentalism. You know, you deal with people with their problems and you become very judgmental. I said, I suppose that could happen, and I'm sure it does happen. I said, I think for myself, what I wrestle with is a sense of being overwhelmed. Like, wow, these people are really messed up, and it just seems too much to bear. Okay? But judgmentalism can be, you know, part and parcel of what keeps us from ministering to one another. What a mess. Huh? Or that stupid person, they know better, and so you distance yourself because you've judged them to be unworthy of your ministry to them. And I'm talking ministry here in its broadest sense, in terms of reaching out to them, helping them, working them with them through a problem. Okay? Grousing. I asked my wife this the other day. Anyone know what grousing is? John? Very good. I had never used that word before until I saw that in the article, so I had to look it up. Grousing means complaining, grumbling. That's right. Think of the Israelites, grumbling. Okay, that's an expression of anger, isn't it? God, if you're going to deliver us, we expect something different than this manna from heaven, this quail or water from the rock. We don't like this. This is not right. We'd rather go back to Egypt. Okay? Blame shifting, hatred, violence, and the like. All of these things are judgments against perceived evil or perceived wrongdoing. What we typically think of as anger, a raised voice, accusatory words, emotional heat, hostile attitude, is probably best defined as the emotionally aroused form of judgment against perceived evil. Okay. Secondly, anger is evaluated. God judges our judging. He morally evaluates every single instance of anger. Question to think about. Did I perceive good and evil accurately in this situation? Is what I think, what I judge to be wrong, is it in fact wrong? Has this person acted inappropriately? Did I perceive the good appropriately or accurately? Did I react to perceived evil in a godly way? So it's not just, was it an evil, but was my response appropriate? Was it biblical? Bill? Well, I think in that case, yes, I would say in part it is relating to that statement. Jesus is condemning what we would call, to use another word, censoriousness. Someone who's always looking down in an accusatory way. Not with a goal, and this is what he's going to emphasize in this article too, not with a goal towards ministering to them, to bringing the gospel to bear, but it's this judgmentalism, it's this attitude of I'm better than you, or this attitude of trying to embarrass them or to humiliate them, whatever. So, but also a person who's censorious is someone who's always nitpicking. Pick, always fault-finding. That's the sort of thing that, which Jesus says, you know, the Pharisees, the leaders of the Jews of his day, they were placing weights or burdens upon the people's backs that were too much to bear. They were not ministering with the gospel. They were ministering with their own self-righteousness. So, yeah, it's all tied together. Okay? Now, notice, this is a big paragraph here that I quoted, but I think it's worth our consideration this morning. And again, I'll try to be as brief as possible. Christianity, says Paulson, is not about being, not about stoic apathy, being above emotional reaction. You see, there are some people, even many Christian people, who think that the proper response to a situation that may arouse anger is for us simply to be stoic. That's more of a Buddhist mentality. I mentioned that last Sunday night. The Buddhist says, when there's trouble, I just have to shut it out. I have to pretend that evil does not exist. I have to live as though I'm impervious to these things. That's not what the Bible calls us to do. Okay? Many people, he says, in the name of being self-controlled, actually prove themselves to be uncaring or obtuse. They sin by omission. Okay? They say, well, I don't want to become angry, so I'll just step away from it, walk away from it. I think many of us, I know I myself am guilty of this. You see a problem, you see something that is a clear case of wrong being committed, and you don't want to get involved. So you just walk away. Paulson says that's sin by omission, isn't it? Because there's a situation that calls for your ministering to them and you refuse to do it. So they become, people who act that way become aloof, failing to help, where godliness would get upset and look for ways to make an impact. That's what we're talking about with ministering one to another, learning how to love each other well, okay? But neither is Christianity about unleashing emotions. Well, I'm just telling you the truth, right? I'm just being honest with you. Not only what we say, but how we say it. The gospel directs both. Yes, you have to say things at certain times, but you have to say them in a way that's consistent with the gospel as well. You know, I know many people who use that excuse or use that as an excuse for being unduly harsh, excessive. I mean, just being so blunt, they just, in a situation which calls for great delicacy, they come with a sledgehammer. You know what I'm talking about? People who could really be a benefit by a carefully spoken word, and they come with both fists and just pound and pound and pound. I think all of us who have served as elders know the potential, at least, to act that way. And I think we have to guard ourselves. We've talked about that. So I want to assure the rest of you that we're sensitive to those things, even if we don't always practice them perfectly, okay? Because we too struggle with our own sinfulness. But we're called to minister to people and to do it in a way that conveys the love and the grace of Jesus Christ. Okay? He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. Anger is not neutral. A line between wisdom and foolishness runs through the center of every instance of anger. It is either godly or devilish. Here, biblical thinking goes directly against our culture. Our culture typically says anger is neither good nor bad. It just is. The theory that emotions are neutral has become a refrain of the therapeutic culture, okay, which really dominates a lot of counseling today. And the counseling you see on television, the Dr. Phil's, the other shows, the talk shows, this is all the therapeutic mindset. Emotions are neutral. Okay, but it's not true that anger just is. Many people, in the name of just being honest or getting it off my chest, prove themselves to be recklessly self-centered. Have you ever thought about that with your own behavior? I just need to get it off my chest. Oh, it felt so good just to unleash it, right? And you're recklessly self-centered. They sin by commission. They are impulsive, causing harm, where godliness would consider the impact of words. Learning to discern the difference between righteous and sinful anger is extremely important and not always easy. True enough. Okay. So now, a number of tests that Paulison has in that first article about our anger. Test one. And again, I want to finish by quarter two. Do you get angry about the right things? Do you get angry about the right things? Anger addresses perceived wrong. So ask yourself, pause for a moment. Did you perceive it rightly or correctly? Or are you blinded by your own personal pain, personal insult or injury, okay? Do you get angry about the right things? That there was an injustice done? That God was offended? Jerry? Thank you. I was talking with Reverend Postman this morning. Actually, he took the same course I did. I'm finding out Reverend Veldhorst took the same course I did, and Steve Postman did too, and they encouraged me to keep going on with these classes. I was telling Steve this morning that my biggest project for this course was a self-ministry or self-counseling project, which was on dealing with criticism, because that's part and parcel of being a minister. You deal with criticism. And I was directed in the course of my study by the teacher's assistant to an article that Dr. Paulison wrote about criticism called Does the Shoe Fit? And he makes the assertion that even the most malicious criticism, the most unfair criticism, is criticism you ought to listen to. That was very humbling for me. Because we have this way of dismissing what we perceive, either if it's perceived to be unfair, unjust, or if it just outright is unfair or unjust. People will say malicious things, whether it's to a pastor or to somebody else. And our response often is to just dismiss it and say, well, that was a stupid thing to say. I'm not going to listen to that. But Paulison said, even behind the most malicious and unfair criticism is something that's driving that sort of comment. And you ought to find out what that is. Okay? So, test number two. Do you express your anger in the right way? Maybe your anger is justified. Maybe it's godly. But are you expressing it in the right way? The clearest gauge of whether anger is right or wrong in its expression is whether it acts to condemn or to offer help. Okay? What do you find in your own anger? Is it trying to help resolve something, or is it simply hurting or condemning someone? Third, how long does your anger last? When anger lasts a day, a week, a decade, a lifetime. You think that happens? I can tell you, as a pastor, there are people who are angry their whole lives over things that happened decades ago. Right? And it just eats them up. It's like acid burning away inside. What does the Bible say in Ephesians about our anger? How long it should last? Thank you. Don't let the sun go down in your anger. As I say to the premarital counseling counselees, don't go to bed angry. I think that's good advice, don't you? Don't go to bed angry with your spouse. Resolve it before you go to sleep, if you can go to sleep when you're angry. Okay? When anger settles into bitterness and hostility, the devil wins the game. Oh, I think that's so right. So right. Four, how controlled is your anger? This is a quote from Jay Adams, who's another biblical counselor. Anger is the emotion that has been given by God to attack problems. The energies of anger must be productively released under control toward a problem. Anger must be directed toward destroying the problem, not toward destroying the person. Anger, like a good horse, must be bridled. I like that imagery, huh? A horse can be a very useful thing, certainly more so in past years, but the point is, a wild, uncontrolled horse is of no use. It does more harm than good. So how controlled is your anger? Number five, what motivates your anger? People motivated by desire for God's glory, for personal conformity to Jesus' model and will, and for the well-being of others will be angry in one way. And all of you know what I'm talking about, I think. People motivated by the desires of body and mind, by pride and false beliefs, will be angry in a different way. And here's what I love about the way Paulson teaches. He makes it so simple and so clear. The simplest question to ask about what underlies anger is, what do I really want? What do you really want? Do you want to see that person punished, humiliated, hurt? You know, to do to them what they did to you or to someone else? Is that what you want? If that's what you want, it's not godly anger. But if your goal is to minister, to restore, to bring about repentance, to see the gospel at work in their lives, that's godly anger. So what do you want out of your anger? Test number six. Is your anger primed and ready to respond to another person's habitual sins? Godly anger is part of grace and peacemaking. Grace breaks the cycle of provocation and reaction, so characteristic of life in a sinful world. Sins, including sinful anger, are usually repetitive. But godly anger starts fresh because it keeps no record of wrongs. Are there some people, especially you find in your life, that you're primed and set always to get angry? It doesn't take much and you have this hair trigger temper and you just want to lash out at them. Paulson says godly anger is of grace and peacemaking. And then seven, what is the effect of your anger? Sinful anger creates more problems. I think we don't need to press that one very far. We all know what he's talking about. It complicates matters. It hurts people, puts them on the defensive. The way you come across tempts them to duck or retaliate. People may still duck or retaliate when faced with the just, accurate, and merciful words of godly anger. But you aren't the occasion of stumbling. They are tempted simply by the sinfulness of their own hearts. Gracious words are sweet to the taste. We would do well, I think, to think about that. Gracious words are sweet to the taste. Are your words sweet to the taste? Even when they contain tough truths, they breathe helpful intent. you know, I say especially to elders, you know, when we minister to people who are in difficult situations or dealing with sin, do we convey by our words and our attitudes that we really want to be a blessing to them? Or are we simply there to beat people over the head, to get them in line, to have them march in line, that sort of thing? Godly anger is part of solving problems. Generally, righteous anger creates gracious circles, meaning, or in distinction from a vicious circle, where ungodly anger leads to more anger and to more bitterness and to destructive relationships. And then finally, on the fourth page, this extended quote from Dr. Paulison. Think about this, would you please? Godly anger does not need to win. Are you a person who, when you're having a discussion or an argument with somebody, maybe with your spouse, maybe with your kids, you always feel the need that you have to win the argument, you have to win the discussion in order for it to be a meaningful discussion? Okay. It does not have to succeed in bringing malefactors to justice. Its purposes are more modest on the surface, but more extravagant under the surface. The glory of God and the eternal well-being of God's people. Again, we ask ourselves, is that our intent? Godly anger has good effects for all concerned. So when you are confronted with unrepented evil, when your best efforts seem to have no good or lasting effect, you don't have to become angrier. You can instead become more objective and matter-of-fact. On the inside, mercy works to soften your heart. Jesus would have you pray for their well-being, which includes their repentance unto life. On the outside, you are called to persistent, straightforward acts of unmerited kindness. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. And if he is thirsty, give him a drink. Also, on the outside, you may be called to join with others in those corporate activities that impose objective consequences on wrong behavior. Church discipline, withholding financial aid, severance from a job, an eviction notice, calling the police, criminal proceedings, enacting better laws, voting in new leaders, and the like. Such good activities are also judgments against perceived evil, but they operate in a more dispassionate mode. They are objective, sober necessities. They set limits on our more personal labors to help people. As such, they are a great comfort and good. It is often a great relief for a person facing persistent evil to know that others are also taking responsibility for making it right. It reduces the temptation towards vigilante action. Okay? A lot of food for thought there. I realize that. Jim? Okay. Right. Yeah, what you're saying, Jim, is that with all of these things, not just anger, we are modeling, we are acting out, we are advertisements of what we perceive the gospel to be. See, I can illustrate this with, I'm not going to name any names here, but in my own experience as a pastor, I find people who are very judgmental in the church often have a hard time understanding God's grace. Because they view the Christian faith as you've really, you know, got yourself in line here. You've done what you need to do. You've followed a certain path. And it's all about what you've done. But grace realizes that apart from God's love and mercy, I can't do what God commands of me. And so people who are judgmental are people who can't understand how grace operates in the lives of sinful people. They can't be compassionate towards those who stumble. Their response is, what's wrong with you? Why can't you walk in line? Your life's a mess. Straighten up. Whereas I think if we're going to minister to each other, we ought to do so in a way consistent with the gospel that we profess. So, yeah, thank you. All right, my time is up. Let's have a word of prayer, then we'll go home. Father in heaven, we thank you that you have created in us the capacity to express holy anger against wrongs that are perceived, people who have been hurt unjustly, situations that cry out for justice. We, Father, have seen that most clearly, of course, in the cross of Jesus Christ, where your anger was unleashed against your Son because of our sin. But we also recognize, too, Father, that there is within us, because of our sinful nature, the capacity for anger that is not godly, anger that is directed towards situations that are not unjust, situations in which perhaps we are embarrassed or situations in which we are displeased with our lot in life. We pray, Lord, that you would give us the wisdom by your Spirit to discern those two things, and also to live out, as we have heard today, to live out the gospel that we profess, to be truly gracious and merciful, even in the expression of our anger, that our anger would be directed towards ministering to others, to restoring them, to building them up, to heal what's broken. And so, Father, equip us and bless us for Jesus' sake. Amen. Thank you for your time.